I've debated on using a Dexter clip for a long time. I feel like it's been enough time. Maybe now it's softened up a little bit with everything else that's come out. I don't know. And I really thought that was Amber Heard in that scene. And I was like, it wasn't. I had to look it up. But I was like, who's the real psycho in this scene? I don't know. Sorry, I digress. Moving on. Okay, James chapter 1, that's actually what we're looking at this morning, and we'll come back around to Dexter and his dark passenger. I'm going to pick up where Pastor Alex kind of left off last week and then kind of continue on looking at what James writes to the church in the early days as it was scattered. He says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance." That's what Alex looked at last week. And then down in verse 12, where we look at this morning, he says, "Well, blessed is the one who perseveres under this trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. When tempted, though, no one should say, 'It's God that's tempting me.' For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then after desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death." Now, I got to admit, the English reads much easier than the Greek does. If you read in the Greek, it creates a complication, a confusion. But part of that is what James is trying to explain that might be missed if you don't go back and read it in that. What I mean by that is this. If you read through in the Greek, the word for trial up in verse 2 and the word for trial in verse 12 is the exact same word for tempt in verse 14 and 15. And so you can begin to see where what James is saying is, now, when you're going through this, don't blame God for your temptation. But on the other hand, you'd come back and say, but doesn't God allow trials to come into our life? Well, yes. Well, but wait a minute. He's saying, but God doesn't allow this perasmos, which is the word. God allows the perasmos to come into your life, but don't blame God when the perasmos comes into your life. Do you see the complication? Like, so in English, it reads pretty easy. If you just make one word trial, one word tempting, hey, it comes out really easy. And yeah, you know, God brings trials in life. I get that. Tempting, that's on me. God didn't do that. But when you're reading it in the Greek, now you're like, well, wait a minute. Which is it here? Is God bringing the perasmos in, or is he not bringing the perasmos in? Which way does this go? So what's the background here? Well, the issue, if kind of the background where James is writing, let me give you some of the historical background. It says in verse 1 that James is writing to the church that is scattered. So in the early days, Jesus dies on the cross, is crucified on the cross. Those who crucify Jesus then want to make sure that those who are proclaiming that Jesus is the Messiah, that whole idea, they want to squash that idea before it can take off. In other words, they're trying to get rid of the church before the church has a chance to really take off and grow. And so we begin to read about how they go and they arrest, they persecute Peter, and they throw him in jail. They're going after different disciples. Stephen is then stoned. Paul, before Paul becomes an evangelist, he's actually working on behalf of the same authorities that killed Jesus. And they basically start persecuting the Christians very openly and blatantly, such that people flee like roaches in the light when after the crucifixion era. They run away out of the area, back to wherever they can to escape the persecution. Well, James is the half-brother of Jesus. He eventually pastors a church there in Jerusalem, and he's writing to all those people who have fled out of Jerusalem facing this persecution. And they're still facing persecution. James is ultimately going to be beheaded in short time. And so he's writing to people who are facing persecution. So when he says, you're facing trials, that's the trial he's talking about. So you might say, well, I don't know if he knows the kind of stuff I'm dealing with. Well, maybe you don't know the kind of stuff he was dealing with, right? Literally, his life is being threatened. Everything they own is being threatened. When you have to flee persecution, you leave everything behind. It is every kind of, you know, hardship you can imagine comes out of that. And so when he says in there things like, consider it pure joy when you're going into trials, and then he summarizes it all up in verse 12, where he says, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial. Nobody feels like they're being blessed when a trial comes, right? I mean, you just don't. Like, when you talk about, oh, I just pray that God would bless me, you know, or if you pray somebody would, I just pray that God blesses you. It's kind of like going back to that prayer sermon a couple weeks back. I pray for you. I really do. I pray that God will bring out his vengeance. Well, I pray that God will bless you with the kind of blessing that James is talking about in James chapter 1. I just pray he blesses you with that kind of trial. But hey, isn't that where we kind of get this whole idea? Well, it's a blessing in disguise. I hope he disguises up every blessing he has for you. Right now, we don't typically think of blessings when we're going through difficult times, right? Like when you get that personal property tax bill in the mail, and it always comes at the perfect time. Like you're riding high, you got your tax return a couple weeks back, and you're like, oh, all the things you can spend it on, I'm going to be debt-free with this. And then all of a sudden, government's like, whoa, before you go take that money that we just gave you back for something else, just know there's another group of the government that wants it back from you. And so you just kind of lose that. Oh, well, it's just a blessing in disguise. I just tell you, this is just, I feel so blessed. And, you know, through this experience, it's just growing my faith. You know, you're going through infertility issues, and you're struggling with this day after day, and you're in this wonderful season between Mother's Day and Father's Day, and you just feel so blessed. So blessed during this season as you watch everybody else celebrate the joys of mother and fatherhood, and just so blessed. You get bad news from the doctor. You're not really sure where this is going to lead, and you're not really sure what the cure is, but you just feel so blessed. Your wife says, I'm leaving. Okay, for some of you, sorry, bad joke, I know, sorry. It's a blessing in disguise. You just don't. God's up to something. Yeah, sure he is. I feel it too. How about that lottery blessing? That would be a much better blessing. He could just be really direct and upfront with it. I don't want to have to wait to figure out what the blessing is. I'd kind of like for everybody to know it's a blessing on the front end. You with me on that? But you know, the reality though is the word blessing as he's using it here. See, we look at blessing from our perspective, whereas the word blessing is more of a connotation or a condition from God's perspective. God says, I'm putting you through this, and my hope is that, you know, through this you will be blessed. Such that you would be in this place where God looks down on you, and now what you get out of the blessing is, let's face it, you're never closer to God than when you're going through a difficult time. Is that a fair statement? And sometimes I pray and I say, God, please help me draw close to you without having to go through a trial to get there. Right? But we know complacency has its own drift and push that pulls us away from God. If you go through a difficult season, never are you more confident in God's power and his grace to pull you through things. And this crown of life that he's talking about, when he says, you know, blessed is one who perseveres, having stood the test, the person will receive the crown of life. This isn't a crown of royalty. It's that crown of, it's the victor's crown. It's like the Olympic medal. When runners would run in a race and compete, they'd be competing for that crown that goes on their head. Maybe you've seen like the old Olympian pictures of the wreath crown on their head. And he's basically, it's that picture of, like, you ever wonder when people do, like, the 5K or the 10K races, right, or the half marathon kind of thing? Everybody gets a medal when you finish the line. Anybody familiar with this? So if you don't know, after you finish the race, everybody gets a medal. Like, as you're, like, crossing the finish line, like, usually there's a water station, and right after the water station, right about the time when you're going, somebody comes when you're, like, in this mode right here, they come and they put a medal over your head, right? Now, here's the thing. This isn't equivalent on par with every kid gets a trophy. That's not what this is, okay? I used to think that's what it was. That's not what it is. It's not like, well, you know, Timmy, I know you guys were in last place and you picked your nose on the outfield more than you actually caught, pop flies, but everybody gets a trophy. Good job. You're a winner in my book. That's not what the medal is at the end of the race. You're not competing against other people, right? You're competing against that voice inside your head that's been trying to get you to quit. And you've won. It's pronouncing the victory that you had leading up to that day. Because there's a lot of trials that you went through. There's a lot of battles you went through with getting out of bed and practicing and conditioning yourself and eating right and getting ready for that race. And you're racing against your personal best. You're racing against your body that is aging and fatiguing and doing everything it can to keep you from ever running again. Right? And so that medal is a picture of, I have won over the voices in my own head which tried to push me to not compete and not to run and not to endure, that wanted me to give up at the halfway mark. And so the medal is all about what you've done to achieve in that moment. And so when he says, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, having stood the test, that person receives the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love them. So these trials, what they do is they serve this purpose of, I've said before, it'd be a horrible thing for you to believe that you have a great relationship with God only to show up there before God on the final day, you know, when it's all over, when there's no chance to make any course corrections, any changes, and realize on that day it was nothing but a superficial relationship and you never really had a relationship with him at all. It's really hard to know whether you really love somebody or whether you love yourself and you just like what they do for you. Please teach your daughters this. Your sons too, but please teach your daughters this. He'll say he loves your daughter. I'm not really sure that's what he's loving, right? He's loving himself, his own hormones, his own desires, and your daughter is just a means to that end, and she's going to think that he really loves her for her. And so often, how many times have you had the conversation with somebody and like, well, I love them. No, you don't. You love yourself. They make you happy. That's why you love them. What trials do is it is a testing, it is a dividing thing to say, ask the question, do you really love me for me? Or do you love yourself and just what I can do for you? The trials in your relationships that you have amongst each other will prove that out, right? Like they always say, you don't know who your true friends are until blank, and that blank is some kind of trial that happened in your relationship, right? You don't know if you really, I often say, you know, I don't know if two people love each other when I perform the wedding. The 50th wedding anniversary, yes. When I do the renewal of vows, it's almost like, what do we need to renew here? We're just we're confirming that they were actually legit. Isn't that a fair statement? Because within 50 years, you've had enough reasons, right? Right? I mean, if you were going to leave, you had the reasons, right? And so we see that's the blessing. There's a blessing that comes knowing that you've made it through, that your relationship with God truly is authentic and real. And it's not just a fair weather kind of thing. Like, if all God does was just bless, 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 if the health and wealth gospel were true, if that's actually how God chose to operate, where you become a Christian, like some of y'all are going to get baptized today, if you just come up out of the water and the angels sing and rejoice and everything in your life from that point forward reads like a Disney fairy tale and you come up out of the water and they live happily ever after, do you think there'd be more people who got baptized just for the ever after versus the eternal relationship with Jesus? I think so. And God says it's not going to work out like that. There's going to be blessings that are the blessings in disguise type, that are going to be the trials that come into your life that put you through a test. Now, so how do we differentiate then? If the same word is a trial and the same word is a tempt, what determines how you translate that word? Well, it's not what happens, it's what you do and what voice you listen to and what your aim and purpose is in the midst of that. Now, if you go through adversity and your goal through that adversity is, God, I want to suffer well. I want to endure this trial and this test in such a way that in the end, you and I are closer for it. I want to look to Job and the relationship he had with you where, as frustrated as he was with you, as angry as he was, as confused as he was, he still continued to hold out that hope. It just said, though he slay me, yet will I hope in him. The Lord's given, the Lord's taken away, the name of the Lord shall be praised. I want to come through this like Job. Oh, Lord, that you would brag on me and the heavenlies to the adversary, that there's no one like me in my relationship with you. That's what I want to go through this difficult season like. Or you can listen to the other voices, and the other voices in your head are the ones that cry out for your cravings. I want comfort. I want control. I want a quick end to this. I want relief. I want revenge. I want to feel good now. I don't want to have to go through this. I want to find a way out of this. You see, what you'll find is that you're tempted by what you crave. So, for instance, trial, loneliness. Okay, you're going through a season of loneliness, whether it be because your spouse has passed away, or they've walked out, or you just never found one, and you're just going through this total season of loneliness. What is the test? Will I wait on the Lord through this season? Is God enough for you? Will you seek him out during this season of loneliness? What's the solution? What is the path that would go forward and help that out? Well, that I would focus on the patience that I need to endure this situation, that they would, you know, the promises of God, that they who wait on the Lord will find their strength renewed in him, that I can wait on God's goodness, knowing that he has my best interest in mind, that one day when the time is right and I'm in the right place, he'll bring about the things that he wants for me in my life. Will I proactively do things to combat the loneliness I'm feeling? You know, positive things like, I don't know, go to church. Good job. So those of you who are in this room, good job. Those of you watching online, I love that you're online, but you need to find some way, somehow, to get in a place where there's other people. If you're struggling with loneliness, online is good, but being somewhere in person is better. When groups come around, join a group. And if there's no group that started, there's one that starts every single Wednesday night. Just come here on Wednesday night, you'll find out. We've got a group for you, okay? Just get around people. Do things to combat isolation. Isolation is a choice. Loneliness is a feeling. You can deal with the isolation issue. Exercise in public, whether you do it up at the boardwalk or joining a gym. I think it's like $60 to join the public gym up at the rec center. You can get out in public and do things out in public. Do solitary things in a public place. Instead of reading a book at home, read it at Barnes & Noble. Instead of, if you got some paperwork you got to do, do it at Panera Bread, not at home alone in isolation. Just being out and around other people will be good for your soul. What's the temptation? To instantly fix my loneliness with some kind of superficial connection or intimacy. And so I go on the wonderful cesspool that is Tinder. I'm not lying. I went on there back when I was single. I have a whole list of screen captures from that era. And I'm just going to tell you, there was a woman in her third trimester of pregnancy with a picture saying, baby's coming soon, looking for a friend for this season. Wow. That's a true story. Anyways, I'm just going to say, that's probably not where you should be in the third trimester. Okay. Looking for unhealthy relationships. You know, whether it be just out with a bad group of friends, you know it's going to be toxic for you, or sliding into some DMs you shouldn't be in. Or the catch-all for everything, why not try porn? You know, these are all temptations in the midst of loneliness where you just seek some kind of connection or false intimacy during that season. And don't turn around and go, oh, well, God's the reason for it. No, 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 no. God brought you to a place of loneliness. That was the trial that you were put in. You chose to deal with the temptation. You chose to go down the path of temptation that just would hit the easy eject button. How can I get my quickest hit of dopamine in the process of this? Okay, the trial is financial pressures. What's the test? Will I get my life in line with God's principles on finances? Or will I continue to go down these same paths? The Bible says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Is this an indication that my heart isn't where it should have been over the past couple months or years or however long it took me to get into this place where I am now? Typically, financial problems don't happen overnight. They're typically the sort of fulfillment of a lot of planting and reaping or sowing and reaping over a long period of time. So that's the test. Will I get my finances and my heart in line with God's word? Will I do things like, oh, I don't know, get some education, like taking a Dave Ramsey class, going through a small group with that? Will I develop a budget and stick with the budget? Will I look at my sources of income and ask myself, are there any ways I can increase my income opportunities? Is there overtime I can work? Is there a second job I can work? Having more money coming in is a lot easier to pay down bills. Will I come up with a plan and some goals for how I will get debt-free by a certain amount of time? And will I make the decisions and the hard choices every single day to make better financial choices along the path? What's the temptation? Find the quickest way out of this possible. Get-rich-quick schemes, whether it be gambling with, oh, I don't know, I'm pretty good. I think I know who's going to win the NBA Finals, and so if I just put some money, this is quick money. Or for some of you more sophisticated, well, I don't gamble, but I just invest in speculative stocks. Okay, very different. Maybe you go to selling things you shouldn't. multiple times in this church and in my previous church, I've had women come to me and say, actually, and a guy, strip clubs pay well. And there's a lure and a temptation. If you've came out of that or you've been a part of that scene, one guy was a DJ at a strip club. He had a great radio voice. And now, coming to stage. You know, he was that guy. I have never been to one. I'm just letting you know. I know the people who work there because I'm a pastor and God brings them here. Honest to God, never been to one. Never had the desire. I just don't understand the purpose of it, right? Like, if I'm hungry, I don't want to go to a restaurant and just look at the food, right? I'm going to go home and eat what's in the fridge. I'm going to stop these illustrations because y'all are dirty. So let's move on. Trial, chronic pain or illness. What's the test? Will I look to God who says he's the great physician? Will I go through this with an eternal perspective, knowing that my health is something that God has given me and something that also eventually, if not now, but at some point, is going to be taken away from me? Every day is a blessing. This isn't my eternal home. Will I keep an eternal perspective through this season? That's the test that God's putting me through right now. What can I do? Well, I can make sure that I'm getting the best medical care that money can possibly buy. I will get as many opinions and look to as many paths for healing as I possibly can, you know, whether they be by God's divine intervention or by the medicines that have been provided. I will do everything I can to get my body in the healthiest position both now and in the future, knowing that one day that's going to come. Because, like, listen, I don't know. People are like, well, you know, genetically, what are you predisposed to? I don't know, but I know that if I'm in good shape, I'm in the best place possible to deal with whatever might come. You can always eat better, even if there's no medicines available. You can always exercise to the extent that you can exercise. And I want to make sure that my eternal relationship with God is such that even if this illness takes me down, I can walk into death with no fear. Bring it on. For me to live as Christ, to die as gain, says Paul. I want to have that kind of attitude as I go through this. What's the temptation? That little voice that says, find relief at any cost. This is a season to focus just on me. You know, what does the paths these lead me to? To self-pity and the victim mentality. To turning to some substance that's just going to numb away my pain or numb away this season to give me an excuse to be angry and lash out at everybody else, including God. Why did God do this to me? Telling yourself that your choices aren't about sin, it's just about survival. The trial, marriage issues. We all have them. You can't possibly be married for 50 years without them. It's going to come. It's inevitable. We say in the wedding vows, for better or for what? Worse. How many of y'all experienced worse? Don't raise your hand. Some of y'all were really quick to, I don't care. What we're going through right now, we both know it. It's all on the carpet. Everybody knows, right? No. For better, for worse, for richer, for in sickness and in health, right? We know it's coming. What's the test? Will you keep your vows? Will you keep your covenant? Will you love like Jesus Christ loves us? What's the temptation? There are many. What should we be doing? Well, I don't know. Go to counseling, maybe. Read books. Focus on your piece of the pie. I mean, hey, 90% may be on them. What's your 10%? Focus on your 10%. Focus on what you can do. Pray for them. Lift them up. What's the temptation? Disengage. Look somewhere else. Flirt. Find attention somewhere else. I think porn usually comes back in on this one. Affairs. Thinking divorce is going to be the easy option. Whether it's a trial or a temptation is up to you. It's a parasmos. If it's a trial, it's going to test your relationship with God and your ability to endure with him to the end. And having persevered, God says it'll be worth it. There's a crown of life there. There's a blessing, knowing that you have a loving relationship with Jesus Christ that will last for all eternity. This has only brought you closer to him in the process. If it's a temptation, it's because of the voices you listen to in the process. In that opening clip, you've got Dexter, and his whole life, he's gone down this path where he has this sociopathic desire to kill in a righteous means, he thinks. He says, well, I'm helpless here. It's just my dark passenger. I have this voice inside me that tells me what I have to do, and I have to go do it. I have to obey it. There's people come into his life and call him out, and he's like, no, that's all you. You're just looking for somebody to blame. And he says, well, if I don't have my dark passenger to blame, then, oh, heavens, who might I have to blame then? Myself. So he says, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. No, the temptation to go down the other path, that was you. The trial, the situation, that was God. The voices that you were listening to, that was you. God's not tempting you saying, hey, now'd be a good season for an affair. What do you think? She's cute. No. The trial was just, marriage is going to be hard. Marriage is a hard endeavor. Temptation was on you. In the political sphere, there's this whole debate as to when does life begin? We call it the pro-life debate, right? When does life begin? Does it begin at conception? Does it begin when, you know, I'm not wanting the baby anymore? When does it begin? James uses this language and kind of flips it around and says, when does death begin? He says, death begins at conception. Read it. That's what he says. Death begins at conception. That temptation that you allowed linger conceives as soon as you start thinking to yourself, I think it would be better to be married to somebody else. Well, I can just numb away the pain. And you rationalize in your mind, while it's not really a bad thing, it's God's fault for putting me in this situation in the first place. Sin's conceived right then and there. At that point, it's only a matter of time and opportunity before sin actually happens. And once sin happens, it's only a matter of time exposure before it all comes out and leads to the death. So it gets conceived. It's inevitable at that point. As soon as you create the profile, things are already in motion. As soon as you send out that message, it's already in motion. You go into the bar, it's already in motion. It's conceived. And it's only a matter of time or opportunity before you do something. And then it's only a matter of time and exposure before it all comes out and it all comes crashing down. How many verses do you need on the exposure piece? Be sure your sin will find you out. Jesus says in Luke 8:17, everything that is secret will eventually be brought out into the open. Everything you're trying to cover up will eventually be brought to light and be known by all. Only question is, will it be on your timetable or his? How vast will the exposure be? Will it be simply before you and God confessing your sin, or does God have to make it completely public? That's up to you. Just a couple of verses in closing as we finish out. When you don't deal with it, I'm going to read a psalm and a proverb and a Hebrews, finish out. The psalmist says in Psalm 32, he says, when I kept silent, my bones were wasting away. My groaning was all day long. For day and night, I felt like God's hand was heavy on me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. It wears on you. The sinful choices you're making eventually will wear on you to the point where it wears you down. It'll grind you out. Proverbs 5 says it this way in verse 22. The evil man gets tangled up in his sinful choices. It's like a netting that trips him up and he just can't get out of it. Eventually, he will die for a lack of self-control. He'll be lost because of his own foolishness. Is that the path you're on? Is that describing you? I think it's that language from Proverbs 5 that the writer of Hebrews picks up on. And he says, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, in other words, this ain't the first time this has happened. There's other people who've been through stuff a lot worse than what you're going through, have been through the same trials you have. They just dealt with it differently. They didn't go down the path of temptation. They took it as a test from God, and they endured through it. Here's a whole list of them in Hebrews chapter 11. Since we're surrounded by all these people who are showing you what you're dealing with is not God's fault, the temptation you're dealing with. God brought the trial in your life, and whether it's a temptation or trial is up to you. There's a whole cloud of witnesses, a bunch of other people who've gone through the same thing and didn't make the same dumb choices you're making. That's what he says to begin this off. And so he says, so then let us throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles us, pulling that same verbiage out of Proverbs chapter 5. That sin's going to trip you up, and eventually it's going to take you down. So cast it off, get rid of it, get out of that pattern. And let us run with perseverance a race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. He received that crown of righteousness, that crown of life. Considered him who endured such opposition, such kind of trials, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, have you resisted yet to the point where you've shed blood? And then he summarizes it up in verse 7. He says, endure the hardship as discipline. God is treating you like children, for what children are not disciplined by their father? The difference between a trial and a temptation is your choice. What voice you listen to and what choice you make. God's voice is not tempting you. God's voice is calling out to you and says, be faithful to me. Endure through this. I got you. I've promised you more promises than I have opportunity to list right now as you're going through this. When you're weak, then I am strong. Wait patiently on me and then you will renew your strength. Again and again, God has promised you that he will be with you no matter what you go through. There is nothing, anything this life can do to you that God can't conquer over with you. Or will you listen to the voice of temptation that wants an easy, quick way out? The difference between a trial and a temptation is what voice you listen to. Are you in a trial or a temptation right now? That's your choice. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for your grace over us to illuminate your word to us in such a way that we can begin to see. These temptations I'm going through, Father, are not your fault. This trial that you brought me into that I blame you for and I'm mad at you for was a very thing that you wanted to use to bring me closer to you. Help me understand you better. Help me become more like your son, Jesus Christ, to love like you love, to have the faith that I long to have for you. But it's been my own heart, my own sin, that's looked for the easy way out, to take control of things and do things my own way. Hear our confession this morning, Lord. May the conviction we feel, Lord, move us to take action, to be brought back into a right relationship with you, to walk away from the temptation wherever it's at in its process, to put a death to it before it puts a death to me. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.